Okay, let's.
Were we gonna get three guys for?
Okay, play around on mute. Okay, here we go. Oh, you want to do it? Can you afterwards? I'll do it for you. Afterwards, I'll get some. We'll do it. Bleed me out there. Okay. All right. So, Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow begins the Yom Hadin. Very frightening. For some reason, I don't know about you, it feels very scary this year. After a lot of anxiety, a lot of emails are going out, all the rules, the warnings. I just got an email from Chaim Berlin. I'm not davening Chaim Berlin, but I got an email from Chaim Berlin, all the rules. A lot of rules. A lot of rules and regulations. It's pretty scary what's going on out there. Okay, to have a safe davening. Let's discuss a few things. Avinu Malkeinu. This Vart, for some reason, I love this Vart. This Vart really appeals to me. It's an old Vart. I'll start with sharing you with the Vart Avinu Malkeinu. This year, by the way, Avinu Malkeinu, we don't recite Avinu Malkeinu on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. We recite Avinu Malkeinu only on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, being that Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos, you do not recite Avinu Malkeinu. And by the way, what is the reason why you do not recite Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbos? There are two reasons. Reason number one, which many people will tell you, is because you don't confess. There is no vidui. You do not recite vidui on a Rosh Hashanah. It's a Yom Tov. We don't say a Shamnu. We leave all that for Yom HaKippurim. So therefore, to say an Avinu Malkeinu, to start off Avinu Malkeinu Chotanu Lefanecha, is against the theme of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is not a day to confess. Rosh Hashanah is a day to be optimistic. It's a day to look. Shabbos. Shabbos is not a day to say vidui. Shabbos is not a day to be sad. Shabbos is a day to be happy. And therefore, it goes against the grain of what Shabbos is about. Therefore, we do not recite Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbos. Once already, we do not say the first Avinu Malkeinu, so therefore we don't say the entire Avinu Malkeinu, because the opening line of many of the Nusachos of Tefillah sets the tone for the entire Tefillah. So therefore it would not be appropriate. There's a better reason why we don't say Avinu Malkeinu, and that's if you look carefully in the Siddur, which we can't do now, all of the Avinu Malkeinu is more or less parallel. Some of them are more difficult, but if you study them very, very deeply, they parallel the Shmoneh Esrei. The Shmoneh Esrei of the week, of the weekday, of Atochonin L'Odom Das, Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sarasech, Hachzireinu B'Shuva Shleimu L'Fonecha. That clearly parallels the Baruch in Shmoneh Esrei, Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sarasech. Chadei Sholeinu, Chaseinu B'Sefer, Parnosa V'Chalkola. That clearly parallels the Baruch of Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Es Hashanah Hazos. The Avinu Malkeinu Shlach Refuah Shleima L'Chayilei Amecha. That parallels the Baruch of Refaenu. And if you go through the entire Avinu Malkeinu very carefully, which I'm not equipped to do, I do have a Sefer here that does so. I have a Sefer that goes through every single Avinu Malkeinu and shows very carefully how each one of the Avinu Malkeinu corresponds to a certain section of the Amida, of the regular Shemoneh Esrei. We have to remember that I think there are 44, you know, everyone knows the joke. The joke is, how many Avinu Malkeinus are there? One. There's only one Avinu Malkeinu. Yet, in the Nusach, we have 44. I think there are 44 Avinu Malkeinus, and there are not 44 fathers and kings, there's only one. We just repeat this expression 44 times. By the way, who is the one who is the author of the template of Avinu Malkeinu? Rabbi Akiva. That's quite a statement. Rabbi Akiva, who is the koyach of Torah Shebal Peh. Who gets the credit for Torah Shebal Peh? I'm sorry to disappoint all the briskers out there, but it's not Rav Chaim Brisk. He's not the founder of Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Peh goes back to Rabbi Akiva. He's the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he showed Rabbi Akiva. Hashem, when Moshe went to Shemayim, Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu Rabbi Akiva. And Moshe, he sat in his shir, he listened to the shir and did not understand a single word. And he said to Hashem, Ribbono Shel, if you have a person like this, why don't you give the Torah through him? Why are you giving the Torah through me? And to make a long story short, Hashem said to him, listen to the end of the shir. You may not understand the beginning of the shir, but listen to the whole shir. At the end of the shir, he said, Halacha l'Moshe Misinai. It all goes back to Moshe Misinai. Although you, Moshe, may not fully comprehend the words of Rabbi Akiva, but you should know everything Rabbi Akiva said is built upon your foundation. So Rabbi Akiva is the author of Torah Shebal Peh, and he's the one who developed Torah Shebal Peh, and he's one of the highlights of the Yomim Noiroyim, except for Shabbos. And that's not a coincidence, as we discussed in the morning, because a main theme of Rosh Hashanah is to enter before Hashem with the Zuchus of the Torah. And when we say Avinu Malkeinu, we are borrowing from the words of the Holy Tana, Rabbi Akiva, who is the one who brought to this world Torah Shebal Peh. He is the one who developed the Torah Shebal Peh. On Yom HaKippurim, Yom Kippur, we begin with the words Or Zorua Latzadik Uli Yishrelev Simcha. The last letters of those words, Or, is Resh, Zorua is Ayin, and you follow all the words Zorua Latzadik Uli Yishrelev Simcha, Hey. Akiva can be spelled with an Aleph or with a Hey at the end. There are two different ways to spell his name. It's much more common to spell his name with an Aleph, but it also can be spelled with a Hey at the end.
And in the Talmud Yerushalmi, it's always with a Hey.
So Rabbi Akiva, and when we begin Yom HaKippurim, the first words that come out of the mouth of the Shliach Tzibor are Or Zorua Latzadik Uli Yishrelev Simcha. Rabbi Akiva, he died. He was died al Kiddush Hashem as one of the Asura Gemalchus, on Yom Kippur at Shkia, the beginning. That is the Mesorah, and therefore we mazkir his neshama with the beginning of Yom Kippur, the moment when he died al Kiddush Hashem, in order to be meoirer his zuchus, the zuchus of Torah, as we enter into Yom HaKippurim. On Rosh Hashanah we do better. You know how we do better? We ma'oyer his schus when he's alive. The Gemara records that there was a drought and different Talmidei Chachamim stood up to pray and nothing happened. And then Rabbi Akiva got up to Davin and he said, Avinu Malkeinu. He invented this term. And then it began to rain. The tzara was over. So it's really remarkable how on Rosh Hashanah we invoke the schus of the living Rabbi Akiva. And on Yom HaKippurim, we invoke the schus of the dead Rabbi Akiva. When he died, Al Kiddush Hashem, at least in the beginning of the day. When Yom HaKippurim is over, the last thing we do on Yom HaKippurim is we go back to Avinu Malkeinu. We recite Avinu Malkeinu at the very end, right before we say Shema Yisrael. The last thing we do is Avinu Malkeinu. Even if Yom Kippur is on Shabbos, we say Avinu Malkeinu to bring the schus of Rabbi Akiva. But in Rosh Hashanah, we only say Avinu Malkeinu except when it's Shabbos. This year it's Shabbos, so we're not going to say Avinu Malkeinu. Let me tell you something which is very beautiful. I love this story. It just for some reason appeals to me very much. And the story goes as follows. There was once a Rebbe in a yeshiva who was known to be a very, very tough Rebbe. That was his reputation, and that's the way it was. He would discipline, chastise, give mussar to the students, to the children. And this Rebbe did not had only one son, a Ben Yochid. Ben Yochid was a miracle. He had a child, very nice. Child got a little bit older. And guess what? Vayehi hayoyim. And this child, being that it was the Rebbe's Ben Yochid, he adored him. He spoiled him rotten. He was the apple of his eye. After all, he was a Ben Yochid. Born to him later in his years. Vayihi Hayoim, the little boy, the Rebbe's little boy, got a little bit older. And guess what? He enrolled him in the same yeshiva where he teaches. He probably got a discount on tuition. Vayihi Hayoim, it came time for the Rebbe's own child to be a student in his shir, in his class. So what happened? What happened? He came. So what happened? He came into the shir. He came into the shir, and the Rebbe said, "You know, just because he's my son, doesn't mean I'm going to adore him and spoil him in my class. I'm the Rebbe. My approach to chinuch is strictness, to be very, very tough. I'm not going to favor my son. I'm going to treat him with the same rigid mussar that I treat all of the other Talmidim." And that's what he did. He beat him up. He punished him. He was very, very tough with him. When they came home at night, my ben Yochid, my ben Zukunim, he spoiled him. In the morning, the father was very, very tough. And at night, the father was a loving, adoring father. So one day, the son says that now, when he comes home at night after a very difficult day, when his father was really tough with him, the child said to his father, he said to him, "Tati, maybe you can do me a favor. Maybe you can speak to my Rebbe and tell my Rebbe not to be so tough with me. Do me a toiva. You love me, you're very good to me, you spoil me. Do me a toiva. Please go to the yeshiva and speak to the Rebbe, my Rebbe. He shouldn't be so tough. He shouldn't be so rigid. Too much mussar." That's what we do on Rosh Hashanah. The whole year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Malkeinu. Every day, twice a day, we say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Okay, twice a day, we Mekabel Oil Malchus Shemayim. There's much greater emphasis during the year of the Ribbono Shel Olam being Malkeinu. And Hashem is very tough. He's tough with us. Look what kind of year we've gone through. Rosh Hashanah, it's the Zman of Avinu. It's a Zman of Chiba. It's a time of love. And in essence, what we do on Rosh Hashanah is we say, Avinu, Ribbono Shel Olam, you're our father. Can you do us a favor? Can you please speak to our king and tell him, go easy. He shouldn't be so tough with us. Have rachmanis upon us. That's the mashal, the nimshal of Avinu Malkeinu. The Rebbe who has a ben yachid, at home he's Avinu. In the classroom he's Malkeinu. He's very tough. And the child says, Avinu, do me a toiva. Speak to my Rebbe, the Malkeinu, and tell him to not so tough with me in the morning. The whole year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Begeder Malkeinu. On Rosh Hashanah, the emphasis is Avinu. And on Rosh Hashanah, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avinu, do us a toiva today and speak to the Malkeinu and tell the Malkeinu, you know, go easy. Don't hold us accountable to the degree that you ordinarily would. Okay, that is one idea in the Avinu Malkeinu. Let's discuss some other things about the machzor. Probably the most significant part of the machzor is the unesane toikef. So let me jump to the unesane toikef in the Chazaras Hashatz. And let's discuss a couple of things about the unesane toikef. Start off in the unesane toikef. Let me turn to the page. Second, I went too far here. One moment, please. I can't find it over here, and this is not my machzor. Let me turn to this. All right, here it is. Sana Toikef, we read about this is an idea which also I found very, very interesting. All of the boy olam, they pass before you, Hashem, kivnei moroin. Now, there are three opinions in the Gemara of what does it mean, bnei moroin. The first opinion of the Gemara, the simplest opinion means moroin, means sheep. So Rav Druk, this is a very nice sefer for Rav Druk on the Machzor. He writes over here a very beautiful idea. We find in Chazal that sheep have three products. There are three things sheep produce. Number one, they produce milk. Number two, sheep produce wool. And number three, at times you slaughter the sheep and you eat its flesh. A sheep has three products: milk, wool, and its meat. From the three products, which product is the most significant? Meat, because the meat is the essence. It's the essence of the animal. The wool, it's not its essence. It grows. It's hide. It is a product that is attached to the animal. The third product is what would not even appear to be a waste product. It is a byproduct. The animal produces milk, and it releases this milk. And the milk is completely separated from the animal. From the three products, there are different levels. Again, the meat is the essence. It's the most valuable part of the sheep. The other level is the wool, which is not the essence, but it's a product. And the third is the actual milk, which is something which is separate. The imagery, the symbolism of writing the whole Bohi Olam Yavron Lefonecha Kivnei Moroin in the piyut that we say in it's Hashem looks at each person and judges him. What have you produced? Where are you holding? Are you holding as a product, just a byproduct? I created you. What did you produce in this year? What have you accomplished? What have you contributed to my world? Are you just a byproduct? Are you just milk? It's also good. Or are you more significant? You're a higher quality product of the sheep, wool. Or are you even a higher level, your contribution to the world that I've created, you've produced meat. Every person is judged, not just mi yichya mi yamos. Of course everyone's going to live. Everyone's going to pass through. But the question is, which line in the production factory are you going to be on? Are you going to be considered from the elite members of the tzoyin that has produced the highest quality product to give Hashem the ultimate nachas? Or are you from a creature who's a secondary level, or a creature who's a third level of only a byproduct but not the ikar product of the sheep? Okay, let's go to another idea. Now this is a famous idea, and I want to just leave it with some something to think about. When we say Berosh Hashanah Yikosevun, we go on to say Kama Ya'avrun. What does that word mean? Kama Ya'avrun. How many will pass from this world? That's the simple translation. How many people, that's how they translate it here in the art scroll. How many will pass? That's by the Goyim how they describe death. He passed. He passed. What does it mean he passed? It's not really clear what that means. He passed into the next world. In Hebrew, there are different terms. I'm not going to describe all the different terms, what it means, different Hebrew words and Yiddish words to describe death. But here in the Piyut, it seems to me that the Paiton has selected the word Kama, how many members of this world will pass from this world. And in contrast to that, the Chama, how many? Yiboreyun. How many will be born, will be created? Then it says, Mi Yichye, Mi Yomus. Who will live, who will die? Mi Vachaya. Avamivikitsa, who in their right time? Umi loivikitsa, who will pass from this world before their time? Loivikitsa may not necessarily mean bad, it may mean that they will live in this world longer than they were supposed to. Maybe it was only meant to be they should live in this world for 70 years. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided, you know what, you're such a good person, the world needs you, we're going to keep you around until you're 120 years. Maybe you're only supposed to live for 120 years, we'll keep you around for 150 years. Miva Mayim, now this seems to be really spooky stuff. Those people are going to die. Who will die through water? They will drown. Or today, you know, today it's even more frightening. Miva Mayim means they will choke through what's it called? The person, there's too much fluid in their system and they choke in their own fluid. You know, a lot of times in the hospital, people who are at end of life, there's a fight between the doctors and the family. The doctor wants to stop giving the patient fluid to turn off the IV because there's too much fluid accumulating in the body and he can aspirate. He can basically choke in his own fluid. And the family is horrified. How can you turn off the fluid? You're going to starve him to death. And there's a disagreement. How should the patient die? Should he die because he'll die from having too much fluid? His body can't remove the fluids. And at least he won't be hungry. Or should he die through starvation? It's a horror. Miva mayim, umiva esh, who will die through fire? Fire doesn't only mean fire to be burned. It means fever, high fever. Umiva cheref, who will die through the sword? Died because of surgery. A surgeon did use the cheref and made mistakes. Umi v'chaya, ripped apart by an animal. And you know what this means for us. What is a bat? Is a bat called a chaya? Where did this corona come from? Well, officially they'll tell you that it was transmitted. It was a disease that started off in a bat that was transmitted from animal, from bat to human being. Miva chaya, so what is a bat? A bat is a bird, is a bat a chaya? Lav dafka, a bat, there are other diseases that are found in animals, which unfortunately are transmitted to human beings, which can cause a pandemic. So the whole word miva chaya is a very frightening word in the modern world. Miva chaya can mean rachman l'slana. You know, it's interesting that we're not equipped for this. The human body is equipped to deal with diseases that human beings generate. We don't hear often about people, pandemics, not that I have any knowledge of this, pandemics where people are dying because of diseases that start off within human beings. When we hear about pandemics, there are diseases that are found by birds or by animals, red cow disease, red cow, mad cow, all these different types of diseases that are found in animals. And they're transmitted from animal to human, bugs, mosquitoes, birds, bats, cows. The human body is not equipped to fight off an illness that was created by a different being, a different species. It's not equipped. That itself goes really to show that evolution is not so pashut. Because evolution, a lot of evolution believes that man came from an animal. Different process of mutation between, if that would really be the case, that man came from an animal, then man should be able to fight off diseases that come from animals, because we're all one and the same. The fact that a human being cannot fight off a disease that came from a different species goes to show that man and these creatures have absolutely nothing to do with one another. Completely different creatures. There's no relationship. The proof is, look what happens when there's a disease. We can't fight it off. The animals, that species, can fight it off. Disease that we create, our own body, when our own body malfunctions and creates a disease, we seem to be able to deal with it. The body itself has the ability to deal, but not when it comes from another source, like we've just seen. Miva chaya. Chaya doesn't only mean when an animal rips, go watch a movie where a wild bear rips a person apart. Miva chaya means a disease in an animal that's transmitted to a human being. Miva rohav, famine. Famine in the modern world can mean depression. A person is hungry for attention. Is starving for someone to say hello to you, to give you attention. No one can believe it. No one could care less about you. That's also called famine. Mivat Sama, thirst, a yearning to achieve an unrealistic goal. And when you can't achieve that unrealistic goal, it can lead to Rachman Lusant, to suicide. Umiva Rash. Rash is a upheaval, a storm, but also can mean where society gets out of control. Out of control. There's a rash of a madness in society. How many people lost their lives because of BLM? Umiva Magefa. What's a Magefa? Well, obviously we know what the Pashup Shara Magefa is. But I told you that's really Nichlal and what it says. Umiva Chai Magefa in the modern world would mean get swept up in the Narishkeit. It's a Magefa, addiction to you know, social media. It's a Magefa. Magefa to waste half the day texting and looking at Narishkeit. And waste of time. That's the start of Magefa. Umiva Chanika, strangulation. Umiva Skila. Okay, you have to be a little more creative in those words. Mi Anuach, who will rest. Mi Anuach, who will move around. Mi Yishaket, who will find tranquility. Umi Yitoref. Okay, Yishaket means tranquility. Umi Yitoref, who will be ripped apart. Mi Yishalev is peace. Umi Yisyasar will be tortured. Mi Yehani, who will be poor. Mi Yasher, Mi Yishafel, who will be humiliated. Umi Yorum, who will be exalted. Now, the point I really want to make, I really want to say a few things about this, but the first thing I want to make over here is that these words are extremely powerful words, and they definitely do not just mean the simple translation of, like I explained, Umi Vacherev, a person will die in war with a sword, someone stabs him. Cheref, today, there's no battles, there are very few battles today in the modern world where people are dying by being stabbed by a sword. But many, many people die because of the surgery that they have was not done properly. They were put under the knife by a surgeon, and even though maybe in the short run, the surgeon did everything properly, and you'll never ever know. But 5 years down the line, the ramifications, the repercussions of what was done, results in a horror. And like we explained, umi v'chaya. I mean, I think that's the thing we take out of this year the most. Not umi v'magefa. People are all crying umi v'magefa, that Corona is a magefa. To me, Corona is umi v'chaya. Infectious disease that comes from an animal, and the word chaya sometimes refers to all of the species of animals, including birds, fish, you name it, reptiles, every type of chaya, and we've seen that over and over in the last 10-15 years, that diseases that come from animals cannot be dealt with by a human being. When there's an infectious disease that crosses the border from a chaya, an animal, to a human being, Rachmana Litzlan, we are in a lot of trouble. West Nile virus, mad cow disease, corona, obviously, coming from bats, v'chulu v'chulu. And these other things as well are a lot of terms are, you find if you read some of these very depressing articles in these magazines that talk about mental health. A lot of these terms over here, mivarov, or mivatsama, mivarash, all of these things. There are certainly probably a lot of terms in the mental health profession that would fit, which have been understood today like not never before, which explain much more detail what these things refer to. So the point I want to make is that these words here, although they seem to be outdated, you don't hear people today dying in these ways, but the deeper meaning certainly is true. Now, in addition to that pshat, there's another pshat which I think, which I don't, I have to research on this idea. I need to speak to some top of the line OBGYNs to explain this. And it all starts with the word, with the question. The question is repetition. The repetition is mi kama ya'avrun v'chama yiboreyun. How many will Ya'avun pass from this world, and how many people will be created. And then it repeats itself. It says, Mi yichye mi yomos, who will live, who will die. First of all, if it already said kama ya'avrun, how many will die and how many will be created, so it's repetitious to say mi yichye mi yomos. Number two, if you're going to say that we're not concerned about the repetition, but the order has been reversed. Because first it starts at how many will die, how many will live, and then it says how many will live and how many will die. What's going on over here? You're just saying the same thing again and again, and you're reversing the order. How many will die? How many will live? How many will live? How many will die? What's the repetition? What's going on over here? So there are Gedolei Yisrael. I think Rav Chaim Kanievsky says this. He just says the beginning. And he says that we're not reading the word correctly. It's not mi ya'avrun with a vase. It's with a base, a dot. Somehow the dot just did not get into the print. And the word, it should be ya'abirun. And ya'abirun in Hebrew means who will conceive. Who will conceive? Which woman who is trying to have a child will conceive? You have to remember that Rosh Hashanah, three Noshim conceived on Rosh Hashanah. Or at least Hashem remembered them on Rosh Hashanah, and in Shemayim it was decided that they would have a child. Sarah, Chana, and Rachel. Shloisha Noshim nifkidu b'Rosh Hashanah. And we learn about two of them. V'Hashem pokad es Sarah kasher omor. Number two, Chana, the haftar of the first day is Chana. We read about two of these women on Rosh Hashanah. Chazal say there were more. And it's a day, it's a special day for Noshim Mspalel, for conception. And if Chaim Kanievsky says that's the opening word of B'Rosh Hashanah. B'Rosh Hashanah yikosemun, uv'yom tzom kippur yikosemun, kama, how many children will be conceived? Kama, how many women, ya'abirun, will become pregnant? V'chama yiboreyun. Now, the conception is the earliest state. After conception, there is no creation. It takes 40 days from when indeed there is conception, when a woman, this is what Chazal say, scientifically, I don't know, you have to talk to biologists to tell you all the details, but in Chazal's understanding, there's a moment when the process begins. That's called Ibor. But then there's a 40-day grace period. And during that 40-day grace period, that creation, that Ibor, is called Mayim Ba'alma. It's water. And at that point in time, a person can be mispalel if that pregnancy will result in the child being a Zohar or a Nekeva. And at that point in time, if a person, a woman, wants to abort, it's not called shvichastam, it's not called a creature, it's not called, the neshama is not there yet. It's a biological process that has begun, which will guarantee, which will result, where a neshama, if everything goes according to plan, will then enter into that creation 40 days later. That's the bria. That's when there's a new neshama, a new bria. But then, who says this woman will carry the child to full term? Mi yichye? Will the fetus make it? Will the fetus make it alive? Umi yomos? Will the fetus die before it reaches 9 months, before it comes out of the mother's womb? After 40 days, abortion is forbidden. There are exceptions. Okay, there's a lot of Torah on this. This is not our share. One abortion is mutter, one is aser. But just because the bria has taken place, there comes a point in time when there's a now question, will this fetus that is alive in the mother's womb, will it live or will it die? Then, even if it will live, will it develop full term, 9 months, or maybe not? Maybe mi vikitzai 9 months, umi loy vikitzai. Which woman will abort the child? Will the baby, a healthy child, will come out after 7 months, after 6 months? Today they can do miracles. They take babies out of a woman's womb tiny little microscopic babies, and they put them in incubators, and they do who knows what with them, and they keep them alive. Mi v'kitzai, mi loy v'kitzai. Is there a difference in the quality of life of that child that comes out of the mother's womb, not in its right time? I don't know. Hopefully there's no difference. Everything is okay. But I'm assuming that if Hashem made it in nature that a woman's supposed to keep the baby in her womb for 9 months, there must be some advantage of the baby remaining in the womb for 9 months to come out b'kitza in the right time. You don't play games. Now, there's no doctor in the world that will tell a woman to induce labor for just no reason whatsoever, just for fun, just have a Sunday bris. It's absurd. It's absurd. If there's no medical reason, why there must be some, if Hashem made it like that, that it should be 9 months, why would you want to take the baby out before 9 months? And what about when the baby stays in its womb more than it's supposed to? Who says that's so good? Unwelcome guest for the baby to linger around the mother's womb more than 9 months. That's also called loy v'kitzai. Now it gets a little bit more difficult. Now here's where we need to call up an OBGYN. Anyone have one on their cell phone, on speed dial? We can call up an OBGYN and explain the next words. Mi v'mayim, mi v'esh, mi v'cherev, mi v'chaya. I'm going to say some really crazy stuff now. I hope there are no women listening in the background. I'm going to say some wild things now. I know nothing about this, but all I do know is that when a woman goes into labor, her water breaks. Right? Tell me, call me Vamayim. I don't know what that has to do with anything. And then it says, Umivo Ish. I don't know what that means. I really don't know what that means. Does that mean if a woman has a fever, there's a sakana? I don't know what that means. That can cause a premature. If a woman has the flu, a pregnant woman has the flu, does that trigger a premature later? I don't know. Possibly. When a woman comes down with a strong fever, can that cause the baby to leave the body prematurely? I don't know. Was that part of the process? Mi v'cherev, that we know what that means. Okay, a C-section, cesarean, where they have to go in with surgery to take the baby out because the baby is stubborn. Or mi v'chaya. Who says chaya means an animal? Chaya in the Gemara always means one thing only. A midwife. A chaya. A skilled chaya knows how to put her hands in a woman's belly and pull the baby out. It used to be in the ancient times a real skill. Today it probably doesn't exist. Well, this used to be such a skill, a chaya, a midwife. Today, the OBGYNs, I don't know, they know a lot. They certainly know quite a bit. They have all their techniques. But it seems that modern science is not what it used to be. It seems like in the olden days, midwives, a chaya, had certain skills that the most advanced OBGYN, OBGYNs with all of their sophisticated tools and surgical skills don't know. To get it, for a woman who has, what I understand, a woman that has the surgery, it's quite an ordeal. It's a very long healing process. And it has an effect on their next children. On the future children, there's a whole big science on this. If once a woman has one C-section, does that mean that mikan l'haba they must have? Or no, you can go back to having a natural birth. There are quite a number, from what I understand, there's quite a bit of ramifications of not so pashut to have a surgery to remove the baby. And if you know some tricks, you have some tricks up your sleeve, a chiropractor, you know, I know they don't know how to touch the right part of the body and have all these reactions, there's something to it. Chaya. Now, the rest of the words over here, I really don't know what they mean. The only thing I do know what it means, the only thing I can say is miva chanika, because you hear these horror stories where children basically are strangled to death by their own umbilical cords. Heard all these horror stories. The umbilical is miva chanika. I know that Rybelski, I told you the story a couple of times. Rybelski, he had a daughter. His wife had a few miscarriages, and I forgot the whole story. And then the doctor told him that your wife is pregnant and the baby's going to die, because the umbilical cord, there's a lot of problems. So he went to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he told Moshe Feinstein, and Moshe said, "Okay, let's daven right now and here, on the spot." Rav Moshe opened up a Tehillim. And together with Rabbi Belsky, they said to Hillel on the spot. They said to Hillel, and Rav Moshe told him it'll be okay. And sure enough, the baby was born. The doctor said his entire career, he never saw something like this. umbilical cord was wrapped around the neck of this girl, of his daughter, three times. She should have strangled to death. There's no way this could happen. And she survived fine. He named the baby. He named the baby after Rav Moshe. What was her name? I forgot the name. No, she married? Yehuda Rechnitz. Yehuda Rechnitz. Anyone know his wife's name? Yehuda Rechnitz is married to this woman. And this woman, the Rosh Tevis of her name is Rabban Shel Yisrael. He named something after Rav Moshe Feinstein, davening for his daughter. There's something called Chanika. Now with this idea, I don't know all the way, but all I want to say is like as follows. This piyut, I strongly believe, besides the pshat, the simple, beautiful translation of this piyut, there's an enormous amount of depth in this piyut. Reading the words, we gave one mahalach, mivachaya, infectious disease that's transferred from an animal to a human being. And you can look at every single word, and you can take some of these words here and use it to describe depression. Different types of depressions, all different types. Everyone can see in this what they want to see. But I think there's another mahalach in this piyut, and it needs more study, more clarification, that the entire piyut is describing pregnancy. All of the different stages, dangers, potential pitfalls that can happen in the process of pregnancy. You talk about mi yoni, mi yosher, mi yishofa, mi yarum. You know, there are babies that are too high in the mother's womb, too low in the mother's womb. There are babies that suffer malnutrition. Women do not take enough vitamins. I don't know all the words, but li bi oimer li, that if we bring in here a team of OBGYNs, they will be able to take every single word and give you a whole Shulchan Aruch telling you, wow, this word, you know what it means? You can take a whole course. I'll give you a whole book. I'll give you a library describing a condition in pregnancy that mamish fits into this word. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But libi oimer li that this is true. Why do I say this is true? Because look at the first half. The first half of this, but you don't have to have gone to school for 25 years to become an expert in birth to see what it says. Kama ye'abrun, how many noshim will conceive? The kama yiboreyun, and how many will proceed to the next stage in pregnancy of where the conception turns into a Berea, a healthy child. There's a span of time. Miyichya, which one of these fetuses will make it to the very end, to the finish line? Umiyomos, which fetus will die? And even among those fetuses that do survive, Mivikitsoi, which one's going to make it 9 months? Umiloivikitsoi. And then I leave the rest for you. I leave the rest for you. The one that stands out at me with like in red with underlined bold is Mivachaya, a midwife. A midwife will take the baby out. And what also stands out by me is the word Mivachanika, Rachman al-Islan, is unfortunately a common form of tragedy in children, Rachman al-Islan, who don't make it, strangulation from their own umbilical cord. So I definitely believe there's something over here describing conception. Why is this so important? Because, again, I told you, Rosh Hashanah, Shloisha Nashim Nifkidu. The imagery Chazal give for Rosh Hashanah, it's a day of the Hashem Pokat Hesara, conception. It's a day where it's such a new beginning. Don't look at Rosh Hashanah just as a day. Oh, another year. Another boring year. Same thing we did last year. When a baby is born, no one says, oh, it's another. A new baby, his whole life is in front of him. He can make out of his life whatever he wants. Every opportunity is there. Once you get older, you're stuck. You're stuck. How much already can you maneuver once you get to a certain point in your life? You're locked in. This is what I got. I got to be thankful for what I have. But a new baby, it's a new world. There's no limit. You have to look at yourself and say, really, you can do the same thing. The focus, the mindset of a person in Rosh Hashanah is Shloisha Noshim Nifkidu. Three Noshim conceived. They brought into this world a new Bria, a new creature whose opportunities were unlimited. The whole period, Rosh Hashanah Yikosev Yom Sekiva, don't look at it gloom and doom, the world's coming to an end, and there's going to be a magefa, and there's going to be infectious disease from animal to human being. Enough of this already. I heard a whole year of this. It's nauseating already. Everyone I call to wish a good year, it's the same boring conversation again and again and again. The mask, the no mask. Enough of this boringness already. Look for something fresh. A new world, a new life. Kama ya'abron. How many new people are going to come into a new world? And you go through the whole Seder later. On Pesach, what do we say by the Seder? Tisha mi yodea. Tisha ani yodea. Tisha yarchi later. New world. A Yitzias Mitzrayim, it was a new conception where everything went smooth. No problems. You didn't need any OBGYNs and all these hospitals and these complicated books and vitamins and all these things. Tisha miyodea. Smooth sailing. Tisha yarche leida. You come Rosh Hashanah. Tisha miyodea. Oy gewalt. Tisha miyodea. I have a headache. Tisha miyodea. You know what Tisha miyodea means? Kama ya'abun, kama yibareyun, mi yichye, mi yomus, mi vikitzay, mi loy vikitzay. Mi va mai, mi va esh. You go through, oh, Yigival, Tisha Yarchid. You know what can go wrong during those Tisha Yarchid later? Do you even begin to chol himself what can go wrong? The nightmare what can go wrong? Oh, Yigival, what can go wrong during the Tisha Yarchid later? This little Pete over here is equivalent to Pesach, Tisha Miodea. But the difference was in Pesach, we were spoiled. We were oblivious to the complexity of this world. It was smooth sailing. Tisha miyodea. You take it for granted. Big deal. Big deal. A woman gets pregnant. She has a baby. Big deal. What's the big deal? On Rosh Hashanah, everything is a big deal. I have a long piyut. Why do you blow 100 koilos, Rabbi Yisai? Why do we blow 100 koilos in Rosh Hashanah? It's Medrash. Medrash Tanhuma says, when a woman gives birth, you have to go and count. I wonder who's asked to count Dracula. You ask him, instead of counting cookies, he should go into the hospitals and count how many times a woman krechs, gives out a cry when she's in labor. According to the Medrash Tanhuma, went into the hospitals of the world and sat there by the women who were giving birth, and he counted how many times a woman gave out a cry. Oh, this is painful. This is a pain. This really hurts. How many times do women cry? 99 times. And when they get up to number 100, that's when the baby comes out. That's when the people say Mazel Tov. When they get to cry number 100, that's the shofar. We blow the shofar, we start off. Barash Hashani Kosev Yom Tzomkimi Chosemun Kama Ye'ah Be'erun. Put a dot in there. How many women are going to conceive and go through this nightmare? And then we blow 100 koilos. And you get to number 100. Mazel Tov. L'chaim. Chaim. Chosfeinu b'sefer Chaim. B'sefer Chaim toivim brocha v'shom farnosa toiva nizocher v'nichoseim v'nichoseim la'alto l'chaim toivim mulasholem. Yeshkar Chavoisai, have a ksiva v'chasima toiva gugge ben shtiar. Rabbi Leizer gets an award. You know why? He's the only one that is brave enough to show his face all the time.
Well, do you have three people to make a...
Okay, you want to do it? You want to do it? Okay, go, stay right here. We're going to get you Meir. We're going to get you three Satna Chassidim. So Meir, we're going to get Satna Chassidim. Mayor, there's no one here. What can I tell you? There's no one here. We got to come back. I'll tell you what. Can you come back at... Oh, the rabbi's giving a shiur tonight. Right, I'll tell you what. Come back. There's a problem. This is a problem because... Come back. You know, log on 9 o'clock. Log on 9:20. 9:20. Can you log on 9:20?
Give me a call.
All right, fine. I'll give you a call. How late can I call you? Let me ask you a question. You want to do it very late? How about are you still up at, let's say, at 10:45?
Can I make you a shaliach?
You can. You definitely can.
Okay. So be mekabel all my hugger.
You can. I can do that. If you want me, I can be a shliach. I can do that. You'd like to do that?
My wife will appreciate it.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay.
What time you go to sleep?
Huh? I don't know. Around 11-ish.
Okay, so I might call you up at 10:45.
You call it and you might call me up.